Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. Just again, another friendly reminder. Dawn Busters Kiwanis Club, they have a few turkeys left. $65, 12 to 14 pounds. That's their pre-cooked weight. You can give them a call at 504-867-8400. They make great gifts. They're very easy to reheat. They give you all the instructions. They're packaged up. You throw them in your car. They don't leak in your car. It's really great the way they do that. And it goes to a good cause, because all of the money made there helps fund all of the projects that they engage in throughout the year. Joining us now, Darren Onula, Coalition Segment, Sierra Jackson Economic Mobility Program Manager of GNO Inc. Sierra, welcome to the show.
Hi, Noah. Good morning. And I know the title and the job is a mouthful, so I apologize for the good morning.
Absolutely. It's a little bit of a tongue twister. But Sierra, you know, you guys over at GNO Inc., y'all do great things. Y'all involve yourself in a lot of different areas. So if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, what is your primary mission?
So my primary mission here at GNO Inc., of course, as the Economic Mobility Program Manager, is to ensure that our overarching mission, which is to make sure that we provide a great New Orleans and a great Louisiana for everybody, particularly within economic mobility, we focus on people of color, specifically Black people in these communities in New Orleans, that aren't necessarily always afforded those general opportunities for whatever the reason might be. So here in the Economic Mobility Department, we make sure to uplift those in the community that are representative of the heart of New Orleans, which is that those people of color and those Black people, of course, particularly focusing on the youth.
So is that a fancy way of saying you're connecting a group of individuals to opportunities, programs, and making them aware
Absolutely.
Of it and just
Absolutely.
Saying, hey, you may want to take advantage of this particular program, this financing, this grant program, or otherwise, if you
Definitely.
Have an entrepreneurial bent, we want to help you.
That is exactly it, Noah. I think you might be on the GNOT.
I've talked about it so much
here.
With your fearless yes. leader disc jockey over the years. I think I have the
company. Yes, for sure. Definitely.
So what do you see, what do you guys see as the most difficult hurdles or barriers?
The most difficult barrier that I've experienced so far is simply exposure and believing in the opportunity. So something that I've seen a lot in the city of New Orleans, as a native myself, as a person of color in New Orleans, is that the opportunities are not far and few. It's just most people in that community don't know about it, whether it's we believe that those opportunities aren't afforded to us, or they seem so far out of sight, whether it's you've never seen somebody do that before, or it's just kind of unimaginable due to your circumstances. So I think once we get people to believe that these experiences are for everybody, and that everybody deserves that opportunity, I think that our job will be much easier, definitely.
Yeah, and when you think about, I mean, this is it's not something new that we started talking about, right? Why do you think I guess it's fair to call it a failure, a letdown or whatever, you know, that we haven't been able to get to that point of communicating this?
So, of course, not to go too much deep into history, but as you say, this isn't a new problem. It's kind of a known fact, especially here, whether in New Orleans or in the world or the United States in general, that opportunities just seem to be more afforded to people who are not of African-American descent or any outside nationality to have those same opportunities that are afforded. So I think it just comes from constant reminders that you don't belong, are constant reminders that there are people who belong more than you do. Even if you do belong, there's somebody who may be able to do it better than you or look different than you. So I think it just comes from a lack of representation and a lack of pushing those minorities in the same way that we would push people who typically get those opportunities.
Do you get the sense that there's still a strong percentage of intentionality in that regard, or is this more of a happenstance of traveling in certain circles?
I think it started off intentional, but I don't think that's our intent anymore. I don't think the intent is to keep people siloed, for lack of a better term. I don't think the intent is to keep workplaces siloed or to keep these different arenas siloed. I think it's learned practice at this point. But I think that we are also reaching a turning point, which is something that I'm really proud of about the work that we do here at GNO. I think we're pushing to a turning point where everybody believes in themselves, that everybody knows that these opportunities are available to everyone. So I think in these upcoming years and in these past few years, we've kind of seen a turn of mindset. I'll say that. We've seen a turn of mindset where people don't need to be encouraged. People know that these opportunities belong to them and that they belong in these spaces. So I think when that mindset continues to turn and we start to see continuous wins, for lack of a better term, I think that this won't even, this shouldn't be a conversation, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, how do you respond to those that say, well, you know, it's kind of interesting for this past several decades, predominantly black leadership in this city, black operated educational system. And the list goes on. And yet we are still facing this challenge in creating this open, transparent communication of opportunity. What do you say to someone that says that?
I would say that they're not necessarily wrong. I would say that it has been a thing to where everybody just doesn't feel like there's a place for them. But I would say that there's always the hope. And I think that as long as we lean into the hope and we lean into the idea that everybody belongs and there's a place in this world and in this workspace and in this environment for everybody. And I think that if we can get everybody to believe that, or majority of the people, or to at least be open about it. Because if I can be frank, I think that many people do believe that, and the people who don't are in the minority. But the people in the minority are typically the people who are more willing to speak up. They're more willing to be a bit more brazen in their opinions. But I think that if everybody could kind of open up and say, no, we're on the same page and what you're doing is outdated, I think then we'd be able to kind of have that open conversation.
Do you think that we're, and not to parch out blame, but I just get the sense that kids leave grammar school education, eighth grade, for example, You know, having talked to quite a few different socioeconomic backgrounds, predominantly black, some Hispanic, I don't get the sense that they're big believers in themselves. And I'm wondering if we're failing them in that mindset and that culture coming out of grammar school.
Yeah. And you make a very good point there, Lou. And as a former educator, I'll go ahead and put on my teacher hat really quickly.
Please do.
Teaching is a multifaceted job. And teachers are no longer, and they never have been, if we're being honest about it, teachers are no longer just expected to come in and point at a board and give you a textbook. Teachers are expected to be your best friend. Teachers are expected to be your cheerleader, your psychologist, your mom, your dad. Fill in the blank with almost anything that you can think of. And I think that it's the teachers who are almost fighting against these worldly beliefs, as crazy as that sounds. I think that teachers, especially here in New Orleans, as you mentioned, with the black leadership and the black educators and the black politicians, I think that here in New Orleans, something that we do that's a lot different from the rest of the world is uplift our black community. And so I think that kind of like I said in the beginning, it just comes from learned behavior. We have 400, 600 years of history that tells us that you don't belong in this space. So it's kind of difficult in, I'll say, 100 years or 50 years to kind of reverse 400 years of thinking. So I think that it's going to be an uphill battle. It'll take multiple generations to come and go for us to finally understand and to see it, because representation matters as well. And I think that that's why we get to have a thriving minority community. Well, and truthfully, in New Orleans, black people aren't really the minority. It's kind of what it was. There isn't much. And I think that's what makes
they haven't been the minority for over a decade.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that that's what makes us so rich in the things that we do, because we understand that it's not always about black and white. It's not always about minority against minority. We are a city that are for the people. And so I think that if you step outside of New Orleans, you could easily see that, wait, people don't do things the way that we do. People don't view things the way that we do. And so I think that it just comes from, especially when it comes to kids, going back to your initial question, I think when it comes to kids, it's just about representation. It's about seeing that, and I don't mean in the sports, in the spaces of sports, in the spaces of entertainment, you know, in those big spaces, in those small spaces. Some kids may have never seen having a black teacher, something as small as that. Some black kids or some minority students may have never seen their parents have a corporate job as opposed to punching the clock at a 9-to-5 at the local grocery store or the local business or something like that. So it's just being able to see what you can believe, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I just wonder sometimes if we're not, I don't know how to put this,
but I'm following you.
reinforcing what you just talked about in an indirect way by continue to talk about historical experiences. And it's funny how kids process information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. And I've read studies about it, and I just kind of wonder, you know, what impact that has, but that's obviously too deep of a conversation for the few minutes that we have left.
We don't have enough time at all.
Right, exactly. But, you know, it's just kind of frustrating, I guess, right? I mean,
yeah.
no matter what the cause or what the happenstance, it's just kind of frustrating because your organization, for an example, is developing and trying to create as many opportunities for everybody as possible. And we still have this sense and this kind of barrier of this disbelief that that's what it is. And it's like, I don't get that mindset.
I can't disagree with you, Noor, honestly. Me and my mom talk about this all the time. Sometimes we speak from a point of privilege. We speak from being able to say, well, I have this opportunity, so how come you don't? Or they have this opportunity, so how come we don't? And everybody's just, as sad as it is, and it saddens me truly, everybody's just not able to speak from that point of privilege. And I think I was able to see my mom go to work every day at a corporate job. I was able to see my dad graduate college with his master's. And so those things let me know that certain things are possible. But when you're in kind of an anomaly of a situation where, my principal's black and my mayor's black and my teacher's black, but I don't really see anybody else like that. It's kind of that's a one-off almost to you. So I think kind of going back to what we initially spoke about, I think it just that representation really matters and that exposure really matters. And I think that's kind of why some people may lean into the thought of maybe we're failing them in the school system or maybe we're failing the kids when it comes to just having these conversations. But if you don't have the conversation, the representation and the exposure, as sad as it is, you kind of have to have the perfect recipe for people to believe that they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, not one solution, right? There's not one panacea solution. And I think, you know, like what you said, within the familial unit, not unlike within any other organization, corporate or otherwise, success breeds success, right? When you're around it, you see it, you experience it. It's a lot easier to assimilate, right? And gain a better understanding. I get what you're saying totally. And it's just, it's the one-offs. All it's a series of the one-offs that are out there that help fully develop individuals. Now, you guys have a program that's being offered in application a period that closes on December 16th of this year. Tell us about it.
So kind of leading into the conversation that we're having here about exposure and representation, something that we're extremely proud of here at GNO and especially in the economic mobility sector is our innovation internship program. And the heart of that program, the basis of that entire program is taking those students of color and those students that are representing minorities and giving them that exposure. Within the internship, we allow students to pick one of five tracks. Typically we do four, but this year, next year, 2025 summer, we're introducing a new track. So students are able to pick from a STEM pathway, engineering, private equity and venture capital, startup and entrepreneurship. And this year we're adding in future energy in partnership with our H to the Future program. And the basis, kind of like I was saying, is to just give those students exposure, to let them know that this is your dream. You're in college. You apply to an HBCU. You apply to a minority-serving institution. And we want to make sure that you have the same experiences as a PWI, as a community college, as a Christian academy, or anything like that. And we want to let them know that there are people who look like you in these spaces who did the same thing you did. They come from the same place that you did. And it allows them to see that things like this aren't an anomaly. This is normal. This is normal to have a black woman be a CEO of an organization or of a business, or to see a Hispanic woman or a black man be a program manager and executive position or a C-suite position, to see somebody take a dream and build it from the bottom and work it all the way up. Or that, you know, people who are minorities, people who are black, Hispanic, whichever minority, put one in the blank, they can be at the forefront of something. Future Energy is new. Future Energy is on the up and coming, but to be one of the brains that kind of power an initiative like that. So being able to kind of give them that exposure and to let them know that you may be the first, but you aren't the last, or you may be coming now, but you aren't the first. So just let them know that things like this do exist and that it is possible.
So this is a very experiential course that y'all provide, right? 8-week internship. Tell us about that.
Yep. So you come in, you submit an application. We're on year three now, so we've kind of got it down. Of course, there's a few little hiccups and things like that, but we kind of have it figured out what our goal and our mission here is. So you come in and you let us know what school you attend, what your major is, and we have a list of companies that range from Gallo, Gallo Mechanical, Gallo Construction, all the way into cosmetology and dentistry labs and anything in between. We work with Nutri-Grounds and Jamarounds for our media kind of people. We work with Cornelius Bankston and the lab, just making sure that we kind of touch on all of those points so the students are able to pick a track. If you are an engineering major, but you also want to start your own business, you can do startup. If you are a business-minded kind of person, but you're also into chemistry, you can do the STEM. So you can kind of mix what your pathways are for the next 8 weeks when you're paired with a company that kind of matches your interests to see if that's what you're into and if this real-world experience kind of aligns with what it is that you need to learn. So instead of having to wait those 4 years or those 3.5 years and get an internship at the end where you've already made your decision, you are already locked into your major, and then you go into this internship and you're like, wait a minute, this is not what I thought it was going to be. So just catching them as soon as we can and allowing them to make that informed decision for themselves. So we give them 8 weeks to go to work every day. You clock in, you clock out. You're expected to have a dress code. We teach them all the particulars of what it looks like to perform in a workplace. What does it look like to have these experiences? We're very proud that students come out with certification. Students come out with TWIT cards. Students come out with experience. They come out just simply saying, thank you. Thank you for giving me this exposure. Thank you for welcoming me into this workplace and showing me how it goes. Last year, we had a student who was in tears because he said, I literally would have never known this had it not been for y'all. And that's not for us to take the credit at all. That just speaks to the experience and the lack of exposure that students have and how this an experience like this could be life-changing for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible sounding program, obviously. I love those experiential opportunities like that because I
definitely
think they are truly difference makers. So we just have about a minute left. Applications close on December 16th. That's not far away, just a couple of weeks. What do folks have to do if they're interested?
If you are interested in applying, the internship is open particularly to HBCU students and to my students who attend minority-serving institutions. There is no age range. As long as you are in college, freshman to senior, you are more than welcome to apply. If you head to the GNO Inc. website, there'll be a little tab that says what we do. And in that tab, you'll be able to see our programs, and it'll give you the link to the application. As long as you submit it by December 16th, you should be hearing something early in January about meetings and being paired with your company as well. So submit the application. Make sure you have a resume. Make sure you have your college transcript. And if there's any additional information that we should know about your college journey, you'll be able to put that into the application as well. It's a simple type in, fill in the blank, hit submit, and then you'll be hearing more information from us.
Well, Sierra Jackson, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And Sierra is the Economic Mobility Program Manager for GNO Inc. I got it right 3 times in a row. So
yes, you got it right 3 times in a row.
I could go celebrate,
thank
Sierra.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, definitely. And I'll tell Michael that you are on the money for sure. But thanks for having me. Happy holidays. Happy Thanksgiving. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Same to you. God bless you and your family, Sierra Jackson. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, if you ever wondered what it would be like to be in the middle of 10 million LED lights, you have an opportunity this Sunday, December 1st, right there at Lafreniere Park, because their Christmas lights display will be lit up. And here to talk to us about Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park. Trip, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us, as always.
10 million LED lights. Tell us about it.
Conservative estimate of 10 million LED lights. We're adding more than this year. It's it's a family-friendly event out at Lafreniere. Only $10. As the clown car always goes, you can bring as many people as you can stuff in that car. And we just want everybody to come have a great time. It's become such a tradition, 38 years now. It's just a wonderful time of year in Lafreniere.
And you guys make it really easy getting in and out. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, why don't you describe the best way to do so?
So you come in off the West Napoleon side of the park. So you come down West Napoleon, turn in the back of the park, then we turn you right. And as soon as you turn in this year, you will start seeing lights. Santa actually waves you in. And we've got all of everybody's favorites are back up. Transformers, Minions, Hot Wheels, Space, Star Wars. Grandma got run over by a monster truck. The Ain't There No More tree. Everything's there. You drive in. If you want to park, you park. You can walk on the islands. It's really just a wonderful event, and we have something for everybody. It's for all ages.
Absolutely, and don't forget the 60-foot sea serpent in the lagoon as well.
60-foot sea serpent, the Black Pearl is out there with a mermaid on the front of the Black Pearl now, the pirate ship, so we're really excited. It's really a labor of love for these guys between the park guys and the recreation guys. They really put their hearts and souls into this display, and it's something that you just can't describe until you watch them do it. And we've been very fortunate. We now have other departments that come and work the lights as well. And those departments are now taking ownership of it as well. So it's really been a great thing.
Trip, y'all used to have something that you would download, and you're able to download tickets. Are y'all doing that again this year?
Yes, sir. At LafrenierePark.org, you can buy your tickets $10 in advance, $15 at the door. But you can buy your tickets early. You get to go through the speedy line. They boop you, and your phone lets you in, and you go right to the front of the line. So it's really a lot faster when you buy them early.
And that's $10 per car, not person. So the more the merrier. And I've seen them pack them in.
per any kind of car, too, Newell.
Yeah.
So it's a bus. It's a limo. Whatever you want to bring, you're more than welcome. This year we do have an added feature, which is there's an app. When you get your brochure, you'll be able to scan an app into your phone, and it's interactive. It's going to describe the Ain't There No More tree. It's going to describe the pirate ship. It's going to describe the Cajun village. And it's also got, for lack of a better understanding from me, like a Pokemon Go game where if you point at certain things, Santa Claus is going to show up. So we're really trying to bring it into the next age as well.
Absolutely. So $10 per car in advance, $15 per car at the park. You enter on the West Napoleon side. West Metairie side.
West Napoleon. West Napoleon, and you go out on the downside.
I grew up in the hood right there, so I should know that.
Well, you would think side. A West Banker wouldn't have to correct you on that, but that's all right.
Yeah, what a shame, huh? Come on.
Yeah, all those Wests that get confusing, but it's West Napoleon, and Santa's right. Waving you in. You can't miss it.
Absolutely. So it starts December 1st. That's this Sunday through December 30th of 2024. Sunday through Thursday, 5:30 to 9, and then Friday and Saturday, you guys are open from 5:30 to 10 p.m., and it's closed Christmas Day.
Correct. We're closed Christmas Day. I want the guys to have the day off for that. And of course, if weather's bad enough, we hate to talk about it, but it does happen. If the weather's bad, we have to close down for safety reasons. But look, we're going to keep it open as long as we can, as much as we can. We want everybody to come out. My dream is to finally break the 25,000 car barrier, and I think this year we could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, y'all have had somewhere between 20 and 25,000 cars. And that's not cars. People. That's automobiles come through, which is huge.
Correct. That's right? Automobiles that come through. That doesn't count the people who walk in. If you walk in, it's free. And we don't count that. We are going to count them this year. We're trying to find out what the real number of people that are coming in is. But we average 3 to 4 people a car. So you can do the math. We got a lot of people coming to see this thing.
Yeah. And the proceeds, y'all just keep building on this, and that's where some of this money goes to, right, is to build on the display as well as to help out with the park.
All the money from the Christmas lights go back to Christmas lights. We don't use it for anything else. It is absolutely self-sufficient. I'm very proud of that fact. We don't go and beg and ask for money from the council to fix anything. We keep it in an account so that when we have something go wrong, the monies that we collect for Christmas lights are used for Christmas lights.
So the more people that come out, the guarantee is that you're going to get a bigger light show the next year. I mean, it's getting bigger and better every year.
Well, I'm going to give you a little sneak peek. We have something this year that your automobile will fit in. So imagine what I've just told you. So we're adding a part of the display that is big enough for your automobile.
There you go. All right. So December 1st, it starts this Sunday at 5:30 to 9 p.m., Friday and Saturdays from 5:30 to 10. It'll be open from December 1st through December 30th with one day closed December 25th. And they always, you guys are always good about putting out if it's closed because of weather. And if we can help in that way, we will do so as well. So just keep that in mind. You don't want to miss it. I went last year with my granddaughter, the year before with my granddaughter, and you know, I think it was the year before that. We had a blast. It was a lot of fun. New things to see all the time. And it was just really kind of rewarding. I really like just watching the reaction of the kids, you know, the little kids running around and, you know, seeing the lights. I mean, that's a show in and of itself.
One of the big creators there is John Hayes, and he's retiring this year. His last day is Sunday, and he has always said that is his favorite part, to watch the kids look at the lights.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Well, Trip Rabelais, thank you so much, director at Lafreniere Park. This Sunday, December 1st, the Christmas lights go on, at least 10 million of them.
At least 10 million, probably more than that now.
Absolutely, at least 10 million. We'll be right back, folks. Thank you, Trip. Really appreciate it. And best of luck to you through this month for sure.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
504-260-1870. We'll go to the talk lines. We'll have a few moments. We'll talk about anything that you want to talk about. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWO. So we were talking earlier about a number of issues that the Biden administration has embarked upon. And one of the issues that we've talked about is this issue of deportation. There's been so many different angles that this thing has been approached from. There's been some breaking news on this issue more and more. As we get closer and closer to January 20th, you're going to see the willingness of federal employees to provide a lot more information as to what actually has been hidden from the public, as to what is happening. We saw a series of stories yesterday of two-year-olds coming across the border on their own. Yes, you heard me right, two-year-olds. And what the obligations are of this country, what do we do, where do we go, how do we deal with it, how much time and effort is spent in reuniting them with their parents, some of whom were already in the United States, left their kids on the other side, came into the United States, and then had their kids ferried across the Rio Grande by the cartel and others and paying large sums of money. It's a human trafficking mess, debacle at best, at the border, and it's got to come to an end. And it's going to be interesting to see just how much more information is released. In fact, there's a most recent story now about the crime rate for illegal aliens being vastly understated. And as more and more data and more jurisdictions collecting the data, and that's been part of the issue, they were discouraged, actually, by not only this administration, but by the second term of the Obama administration to collect this data because they thought it was a discriminatory practice to do so, because no one really wanted the breadth and depth of this situation to be revealed. So they discourage people from being able to ask about their status or this or that or everything else through the booking facilities. Didn't want any of this information gathered, didn't want to be able to share this information with immigration, all of which seems to work contrary to the best interests of this country. It's one thing to ask them at a traffic stop. It's a whole nother thing if you've already arrested them for a crime and you're at booking as to what their status is. They're in custody. But they even didn't want that information either, which is kind of interesting and telling, right, as to how serious they are about this issue, how serious they are about adding color and flavor to this issue so that we could understand exactly what the challenge may be. You know, the real interesting thing is, as we talk about reform, reform to what? If you don't have the problem completely and totally quantified and identified, I mean, you're never going to know exactly, but there should be a desire to get close, right? So that you gain a better understanding of the trends, how much infrastructure you actually need, what type of infrastructure do you need, operationally, what can you reasonably expect to accomplish if you had those, right? And the cost. I think these are all things that the public would want to know about. I think it's valuable to know about it. I think it's critical to the conversation and debate on the issue. But it's almost the Nancy Pelosi approach. We'll read the bill after we approve it, and then we'll gain a better understanding of what it actually does. Well, that's a dangerous strategy. It's not a strategy at all. You're voting in the dark. And before we embark on reformation, it would seem to me that we want to have all of these challenges identified. Now, when I listen to Tom Homan, the guy that's the board czar coming in, I think this is exactly what he wants to do. I think he's going to place some responsibility on states and locals to collect data and to provide that data and to have an open and transparent conversation with Border Patrol, immigration, and others about their challenges, what's happening in their communities, and how they can best go about solving these issues collaboratively. It's the only way it's going to work. And I think, you know, a lot of Democrats recognize that the easiest way to create havoc and continue to have havoc is to not participate and put up barriers and not communicate, not have any level of transparency, create sanctuary cities, complain about the impact in their communities, reach out to the federal government for sustenance. And what's not going to happen, that is a better bet than Secretariat, is that the incoming president's going to be sending them money to help them from that problem, especially if they're not assisting ICE in trying to deal with the issue. So without that happening, it's going to be interesting to see what their approach is going to be. And I love Tom Homan's approach as well. He cites a federal law that it's against the law for individuals to stand in the way of federal government enforcing immigration law. Because remember, most of the activities within immigration are carved out to the federal government. So there's a whole area out there where if the state or local government stands in the way of what they're doing, that they could be potentially violating a federal statute. So I love the way that Tom Homan drew the line in the sand. He said, we fully intend to explore the possibility of arresting these individuals that by policy stand in the way of what immigration is trying to do. You were recalling in not too distant past, they shut them out of courthouses, they shut them out of courtrooms, they didn't allow them entry into the jails in order to inquire about individuals that had been incarcerated there. They wouldn't share release time, date, or otherwise with them. They wouldn't accept any of their holds that they placed on these individuals. So they took a number of measures to evade and stand in the way of federal authorities doing their job in the way that historically it's been done operationally in this country. Because they have decided that they have the right to pick and choose what laws are going to actually be enforced and what laws are not. And the ones that they don't like, they will stand in the way of the federal government in enforcing same. So it'll be very interesting to see where we go. A lot of more data is coming out. We'll talk about that in the coming days after the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll also be watching what has actually happened and what Alejandro Mayorkas is trying to do as the secretary, because he ain't done yet. That you can bank on. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. So, folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Councilwoman at Large Jennifer Van Ranken. There is a proposed project in the city of Gretna, and we'll talk about the terms and conditions of that project. Some of those terms and conditions the councilwoman has an issue with. There's also been allegations of some collusion between the councilwoman and the IG, and we'll talk about that as well. The Ethics and Compliance Commission met the other day and have decided to hire outside counsel to investigate the actions of the Inspector General's office. So we'll talk about all of those issues with Councilwoman Jennifer Van Ranken when we return.